Hey, we haven't heard that music in a while. Welcome to a special mid-December edition of Jay's Talk on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Show Ali with you, flying solo for the next hour. You can text me anytime, 590-590, name and location, please. That's the people's text line. It's always open. Standard data and messaging rates may apply. You can send me a message on X as well, at SNS Ali with two L's, and we'll sprinkle in your texts throughout the program. You guys know the drill. We don't usually have our Jay's Talks this early in December. And, I mean, heck, last year we had to wait a few more weeks after today before getting some news. I think it was around Boxing Day in 2023 that we waited to hear that IKF had signed with the team. Well, this year, news came on the evening of December 10th as we all simultaneously got the passing bomb that your Toronto Blue Jays had acquired Andrés Giménez from the Cleveland Guardians. It did take a while for the full trade to trickle down, but this is the full trade as per Sportsnet's own Ben Nicholson-Smith. So Cleveland, as you now know, sending Andrés Giménez and pitcher Nick Sandland, and the Blue Jays send back Spencer Horwitz and minor league outfielder Nick Mitchell. So that's the news of the day in Blue Jays land. We'll keep our eyes open for any more signings or trades in the next hour, but that's where we are. The Rule 5 draft did also, I guess it's actually still going on, but the Blue Jays did make a pick in the Rule 5 draft. The Toronto Blue Jays having selected right-handed pitcher Angel Bastardo from the Boston Red Sox with the 7th overall pick in the 2024 Rule 5 draft. A 22-year-old reliever, Venezuelan reliever, appeared in 78 games, 74 starts, 4.76 ERA with 357 strikeouts. And that's across 5 seasons in the Red Sox organization. So Angel Bastardo, the most recent pick for the Blue Jays. But of course, I'm not sure we're going to spend a lot of time talking about Bastardo. But if we do have more news and notes in the next hour for the Blue Jays, we will certainly discuss. We do have a few guests along the way to help us discuss the trade. Joining in about half an hour is Chris Rose, and I think most people will be familiar with Chris from NFL Network, but of course, he also has the Chris Rose Rotation podcast. So apart from being an NFL expert, Chris is also a baseball expert. He is also a big Cleveland Guardians fan, so we'll get the skinny on Giménez and what to expect from him for Blue Jays fans who are not super familiar with what he brings. The short version is that he has a somewhat light bat and a platinum glove, so an elite defender who hasn't hit very well in 23 and 24, which sounds pretty familiar. But we'll get the full version from Chris Rose in approximately 30 minutes, and we're about to be joined.
Cleveland's cool.
Hey, maybe he will. Maybe he will tell us that. Who knows? We're about to be joined by Nick Ashbourne, who wears many hats. But today, the hat he wears on this show is that of Blue Jays contributor to Sportsnet.ca. And of course, if you listen to Jay's Talk or Jay's Talk Plus in 2024, he is an occasional co-host with me, and I'm always happy to have him aboard. Before we bring on Nick, though, I have to ask you, the listeners, a very simple question. What do you think of this trade? Giménez in, Horwitz out. Do you like the trade? Does your liking of the trade hinge on what else the team does? Can it be graded separately? Did you hate that Horwitz was the guy to go, or did you not really mind it? Like, I didn't mind it, I admit, but I know some people felt a little more strongly about Horwitz. Give me all your takes. I want all of your takes on this trade. And as always, you can text me at 590-590, name and location. Again, the people's text line is always open for your texting pleasure, and I will read your text throughout the next hour. All right, let's bring on Nick Ashbourne again, Blue Jays contributor to Sportsnet.ca, occasional co-host of Jay's Talk and Jay's Talk Plus with yours truly, and co-host of the Blue Jays Happy Hour podcast with Andrew Stout. And Nick, how's it going today, man?
Good. Pleasure to be with you.
Yeah, always fun when we get to catch up. You know, as I understand it, you and Stoughton recorded a pod right before the trade went live. Isn't that the way of the world, though, right? Like, it would be equally fitting if, like, we had this whole conversation, and then in an hour when the show was done, that Jay's made a big trade or signing, like, minutes after our show ended today.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because we thought we'd had some good luck. We had the Yimi Garcia signing come in during the show, and we were able to address that in real time. And so it's like, okay, we dodged a bullet here, but it was obviously not the case.
No, that's just how it is, right? That's how we always that's how it always goes in this world. But hey, it's always fun when we get a big trade to discuss. Is you know what? There's nothing quite like seeing the pass the notification hit, and then you kind of like scan it really quickly and see that it has the words Toronto Blue Jays in it. And sometimes you wonder, you know, what the reaction is going to be. I admit, when I saw the trade come down, my first reaction was, I like the deal, but I can't quite, you know, judge it completely without knowing what the return was. Now that we know the return is Spencer Horwitz and minor league outfielder Nick Mitchell, I honestly not that fussed. But I before we talk about Horwitz's departure, I am curious what you and your immediate reaction was when you saw the pass and tweet.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's clearly a case where they've acquired a very good player. And what people are worried about right now is he the type of player that the team needs? And there's been a lot of talk about the power deficit of this club and how they need more offense. And he can maybe bounce back to being sort of a league average bat, but he's not someone who makes a huge impact in that way. So there's a little bit of vitriol, I felt, on social media about this move. But if you kind of reel it back a little bit, the reality is this is a really, really good starting everyday player. And Spencer Horwitz is a guy they didn't really believe could play second base. Maybe that'll be proven false in the future. We'll see. And someone who they didn't play against left-handed pitching really in any way. So you're talking about kind of a platoon bat, first base DH. And that's not a very rare player type to acquire. I'm not going to say that Horwitz won't have a good career and he doesn't have some good days ahead of him. But at the end of the day, I think they saw Jimenez as a guy who's an everyday solution in the infield, and Horwitz is someone who's more of a complementary player.
And you know, you look at Jimenez and what his role could be going forward. And I mean, certainly I think we're, you know, middle infielder, you're expecting him to play a lot of second base, but I think there is something to the idea, mainly because I've been reading a lot about Jimenez from a Guardian standpoint. And I do think when it comes to where he could play going forward, certainly second base is the position we think, but also like there's probably a non-zero chance that he gets some, but he gets some starts at shortstop as well, Nick.
Yeah, you've been doing a little bit too much football radio over the last couple months. No, I think you're right. And the Blue Jays are not going to say very much about that aspect of it because that sort of concedes the idea that Bo Bichette isn't going to be around long term. But I think we all know that probabilities are that is the case, that Bichette will be on another team in the future. And Jimenez is a guy who's often been described as a shortstop playing second base. He played a lot of shortstop in the minor leagues. He's a fantastic athlete. He has the skill to do it. And I do think there's a pretty decent chance that this is the shortstop of the future.
We're chatting with Nick Ashbourne, Blue Jays contributor to Sportsnet.ca, co-host of the Blue Jays Happy Hour podcast, occasional co-host of Jays Talk with myself as well. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about Spencer Horwitz, because I thought a lot of the reaction, and again, like, you know, social media is what it is, Nick, right? But I thought a lot of the reaction to Horwitz getting dealt was, I don't want to say overblown, because people are valid to feel, it's like valid for them to feel however they feel. And I know Horwitz had become, especially from last year to this year, had become more of a fan favorite. And, you know, when fan favorites get traded, that is never fun. And I would say he's like at least equally or was equally a fan favorite alongside the rest of the Buffalo Brigade, specifically Ernie Clement and Davis Schneider. And now here he is, one of those guys getting dealt. To your point about what he was in the organization, I totally agree. You know, probably wasn't a lot of places for him to play. But I gotta think that while I didn't see the fit for Horwitz with the Guardians, I really do see the fit with the Pirates. I mean, this guy is now going to get to play a lot of first base, I would imagine. The Pirates not have a slam dunk first baseman, and then on top of that, he gets to be reunited with Matt Haig.
Yeah, I can absolutely see the fit. And this is the type of player that the Pirates probably should be going after. Yeah. Guys who, maybe more competitive teams, I'm not saying the Jays have been that last year, but more competitive teams think are limited and you believe in them more and you give them a chance, you give them a bat. Like, I'm sure the Pirates are going to let him hit against left-handed pitching far more than the Jays did, because they wouldn't have made the steal if they didn't believe in him more than the Jays do, and, you know, more than the Guardians do as well, to be honest. And there's a possibility that he truly becomes this locked-in, everyday first baseman who is way above average offensively, but his struggles against lefties, his lack of raw power, make that a difficult path for him to trot. Again, could happen, and he's probably on the right team to see if it will happen, but there's definitely still question marks with him.
After also seeing the Guardians immediately turn around and trade Spencer Horwitz to the Pirates, I couldn't help but continue to think that this, at least in part, maybe not completely, Nick, but at least in part, was a salary dump for the Guardians. Because you look at how much money Jimenez is making. I mean, he's not making that much money in 2025 and 2026, and like that much, I'm using air quotes here, because it's all relative, right? He's making $10.5 million in 2025. He's making $15.5 million the year after in 2026. When you get to years 27, 28, and 29 of this deal, there's a club option for 2030. But leaving aside the club option for now, 27, 28, and 29, those years he's making well above $23 million. So that's where the bill comes due a little bit. But like, the way I look at this is, it's a salary dump for the Guardians, and they now turn to, I mean, they have the number one overall pick from last year, who was a second baseman, Bazana. Then they have Brian Rocchio, who could probably be a shortstop. So they have some younger players, cost-controllable players, more importantly, that works for them. But from a money perspective, I think that's a big part of the reason why the Guardians ended up moving off a guy they just essentially gave a big contract extension to.
Yeah, and to be clear, the term salary dump can imply that you're not talking about a good player.
Right.
And what we're talking about here is a cheap franchise, to be honest. I think a lot of other teams would have felt that Jimenez's contract was palatable, was likely to provide, you know, at least decent value if he's an everyday player, whether that's at second base or at shortstop in the future. You know, $23 million is not a small sum, but if you're an above average starter, you can go and earn that money. And so the Guardians are just so inflexible in what they're willing to spend that for them, they really need to get really good value on basically everyone who's not a superstar, because they can't really afford to pay guys in free agency, and that's just the way they run the organization. So salary, absolutely a part of it, but more so because of what Cleveland is than what Jimenez is.
Yeah, I'm with you. And I do wonder, we're going to talk to Chris Rose in about 15 minutes, and I'm going to ask Chris about, you know, I mean, he probably will know a little more intimately because he's a Cleveland guy, but about the, I'm curious how much like the Bally Sports deal, and we knew that Guardians were already a team that was a little stingy even before this, but now that the Bally Sports is no longer associated with the Guardians, I think Major League Baseball is going to be taking care of the broadcast for the Guardians and a host of other teams. Like, I do wonder how much that affects how much money you have to spend when it comes to going out there. Not just for free agents, mind you, but also for like the guys you are already paying. And if they're prioritizing other players, I got to imagine, Nick, that they're going to prioritize, like, you know, they want to keep Jose Ramirez and they got to pay Josh Naylor at some point. So I think that is certainly a factor, if not the factor. Generally speaking, when it comes to the trade, like the way I have viewed it in the last, like, I guess almost 24 hours has generally been, it's a fine trade, but not if it's the only move the team makes. Does that make sense? Like, I think if the team ends up going out there and still spending a lot, whether it's Corbin Burns or whether it is a position player, and I think we all can all agree position player is still at the top of the list of needs. If this ends up being like the third most significant news of the offseason, I think it is not only fine, I think it's probably pretty great. But if this ends up being the move of the offseason, I think you would probably agree that most would be a little disappointed.
Absolutely. I mean, you look at this team's lineup today, and it's just not competitive with some of the better teams in the American League. And in theory, if they got some luck in the bullpen and the starters were really good and Bowden Francis was a guy we saw for half of last year, like, you can twist yourself in knots and try and convince yourself it's a competitive team. But I see an incomplete team right now. Like, they do need more offensive punch. We'll see what happens in the bullpen. I'm not convinced they're going to do a ton more there, but they probably should. Like, this is a group that would need a huge Bobichet bounce back, would need Will Wagner to be kind of an above average hitter, potentially by a decent margin. So there's a lot that this team can still do. We'll see how ambitious they're going to be. I think you're right. You know, this trade is great in a vacuum. I think it is a positive for the team overall. But at a certain point, you do have to address needs as well. And this was a deal more about getting a player they felt was good value and they could acquire for relatively little than saying, here's what's wrong with the team and here's how we're going to fix it.
I'm chatting with Nick Ashbourne, Blue Jays contributor to Sportsnet.ca, co-host of the Blue Jays Happy Hour podcast as well here on a special edition of Jays Talk on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Show Ali here with you for another 45 minutes or so. You know, actually, funnily enough, Nick, the last time we spoke was actually pre-Juan Soto. We're in the post-Juan Soto world when it comes to the Major League Baseball offseason, and we've learned a little bit about the Blue Jays process and their place within the Juan Soto sweepstakes. And I think we've learned that they weren't that close to the final bid. I think we've also learned that Steve Cohen, no matter who the opposing teams were, was never going to be outbid. But I did want to have this conversation with you before I let you go. Just the idea on, in a post Juan Soto world, and taking that money that they were, in quotes, in theory, going to spend on Soto and spending it on free agents. Well, I got to think at least some of that money should be spent on Vladimir Guerrero Jr. So if that is the case, what we're really talking about now is buying Vladdy out of going to free agency. And if that's the case, the time for a hometown discount or a discount of any kind really is gone. No?
Oh, I mean, the amount of leverage that Vladimir Guerrero Jr. has right now is absolutely immense. Like, he's coming off a huge year. He knows that the organization doesn't really have a centerpiece to build around other than him. He's just seen Soto get this huge deal. Now, there's a pretty big difference between the value in those players. You know, Soto plays a more valuable position. He's been more consistent. The highs have been higher with him. The playoff stuff, I don't know. You could go down a list. Like, that's not to discredit Vladimir Guerrero Jr., but, you know, Soto is firmly on that Hall of Fame track.
Yeah.
But at the same time, he's a similar age and an elite hitter, and he's shown it twice now. And so he's going to be able to ask for a massive contract. And I think it's a contract that this front office is going to be pretty uncomfortable with, based on the fact that he's a first baseman DH, realistically, as much as there's chat about third base. But the organization is going to be in a really tough spot if they don't give him that contract, even if it's not great for value on kind of a dollars per wins above replacement basis.
Well, you tell me if I'm being fair or not, because I remember you and I had this conversation on Jays Talk earlier in the year, maybe in the spring, but we were talking about like the post Otani sweepstakes, and you know, like the Otani, like backing up the Brinks truck for Shohei made sense, and as it did for Soto, I think, but they made sense in different ways, because Otani, you know, and I talked about this yesterday, but the idea that ultimately, Otani presented a very unique business case, not only because he's a two-way player and elite at both positions, but also because of the market he brings. And I mean, Soto's an international player as well, but just in the sense of tapping into a part of the world that would follow him no matter where he goes. And obviously, they didn't work out for the Blue Jays, but I think there was a general consensus that, okay, well, you're willing to offer Shohei Ohtani, you know, $700 million or whatever it was. That doesn't necessarily mean that you're willing to offer that same amount of money to other players in that free agency class. I think it's different now, right? It is different, not because you whiffed on two big free agents, but because, like, you are still effectively buying a Hall of Fame plaque if you're getting Juan Soto. But the reason I view it as differently, Nick, is because with Juan Soto, and I'm using air quotes here because it sounds ridiculous to say, but all, quote unquote, that you're getting is a really good player, right? And again, you want to have those kinds of players, but it's not as though there's some special business case where Juan Soto is attracting a whole different market like Shohei was. So if that's the case, on top of that, this being a particularly good free agent class, like I think a lot of fans will not give the front office an excuse or a pass if they don't go out there and sign a big-time megawatt free agent.
Yeah, no, I get what you're saying, because Ohtani did present this business opportunity that was distinct from what Soto offers. Soto offers the ability to sell season tickets for sure, excitement about the franchise, something this team could really use considering how down on the team the fan base is. I think you could have made a case that there was business value there, but Ohtani's just a whole different animal. And so Soto is better conceived as like, yeah, a better version of Vladimir Guerrero Jr. than someone like Ohtani in a sense. And you're right, the people know that that money is out there, and so they want to see them spend it. I think where things are going to be difficult is I bet you this front office made a case to ownership that Ohtani and Soto were opportunities that do not come around every year or even close to every year. And I know that they happened year after year, so maybe it seems like that, but these guys do not show up in free agency. And the guys that they'll be pursuing now potentially aren't as unique as players or as opportunities. And so the budget might be slightly different for these guys. And we'll see where that takes the team. But if they don't do significantly more than they've done, you know, it's been a busy 24 hours. But if they don't do significantly more, there's going to be a lot of backlash from the fan base, because I think expectations are fairly high that they're going to do some serious shopping in this free agent market.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think the expectations are, I think, rightfully pretty high, especially after the season and expectations that happened this past season. So I know I'm with you. I'm chatting with Nick Ashbourne, contributor for Blue Jays coverage to Sportsnet.ca, occasional co-host of Jays Talk and Jays Talk Plus with yours truly, and co-host of the Blue Jays Happy Hour podcast with Andrew Stoughton. Nick, look, I appreciate you doing this for me, man, on short notice. Always fun when we get to chop it up about the Blue Jays, as we have done. You know, we could do this for a whole other hour, but I don't want to keep you. I do appreciate it, as always, and let's hope we get more news for us to discuss in the next couple of weeks.
Absolutely. Always a pleasure.
There he goes. Again, Nick Ashbourne from Sportsnet.ca, and his own podcast, Blue Jays Happy Hour podcast with Andrew Stoughton, can be found wherever you grab your favorite podcast. Let's read some of your texts before we take a quick break. We're going to chat with Chris Rose in about 10 minutes' time. Chris Rose, of course, of NFL Network fame, but also of the Chris Rose Rotation podcast, the big Cleveland Guardians guy. So we'll chat with him in a couple of minutes. But I want to read your text, 590, 590, name and location. I see one from, let's see, who's this one from? I'm not actually sure. Okay, y'all have to text me your name, because I see this text. I just don't see a name associated with it. I see one, want to know about what you guys think about the Jimenez trade. Good trade, added some consistency to the Jays, but a lot of legwork to go. That's an anonymous text, so if you want to send me your actual name, I will give you credit. Curtis in Milton says, trade is excellent as long as they still bring in a big bat. That is how I view it, Curtis, because if, like I said to Nick, if this ends up being the biggest move the Blue Jays make before opening day in March, prison, right? Jail for everyone involved, right? Believe it or not, right to jail. Like that, I will be as consistent as possible on that point. This cannot be the biggest move of the offseason. It's not enough, right? I mean, don't get me wrong. This is like Jimenez has a platinum glove, multiple gold gloves. Like, he might legitimately be the best infield defender in all of baseball. I don't think it's a dramatic exaggeration to suggest that by any means. Like, that is actually how good he is, right? Like, I think he probably is better, or at the very least as good as peak Matt Chapman when it comes to defensively. Like, you just don't want to see baseball sit to Jimenez. But that is not necessarily what the team needs, right? Like, we know for better or for worse now that this team adheres to their philosophy of run prevention, right? I texted Blair when I saw the news yesterday, and he just texted me back, run prevention. Like, it's true. That's what this is, and we've heard those words uttered ad nauseum to the point where I think no one wants to hear them again, and I totally get it. So it just can't be the biggest move of the offseason. Having said that, in a vacuum, like Nick said, I actually quite like the trade. Cost-controllable guy, probably ends up being the short, maybe even long-term solution if Bo Bichette leaves. Do you want to see Bo leave? No. But, I mean, he's definitely a far better defensive player than Bo is, as we know. Bo makes it a bit of an adventure sometimes on the fielding side of things. So, I don't know. Yeah, 63 RBI, 9 home runs from Jimenez last year. It's not going to move the needle a whole hell of a lot, but I like the trade as long as it is not the biggest trade of the offseason. I see one. I like the contrarian takes as well. Brad in Greenwood, Nova Scotia, I think. Brad says, and Brad, I think, echoes the idea of, like, this is not what they need. He says, contrary to most opinions, I hate the trade. It's just what they need, another second baseman. It's like the Raptors trading for another guard. Yeah, we don't want to see that. Certainly not in a year like this. Doubling down on a mistake, trading offense for defense in an area of no need, and he was cheap. Look, I can see why we would think that about Horwitz, but, I mean, I don't know. Horwitz, not a lot of power there, right? Like, if we're being honest, I don't think Horwitz was also going to solve the power issue for the Blue Jays. Like, truthfully, I'm not sure any of the young guys, Clement, Lopez, Wagner, Loperfido, not just the infielders, but like a whole bunch of the young guys we had seen a bunch from last season, and certainly Horwitz. I'm not sure any of them are solving this power problem. Like, the guys who are going to solve the power problem on the team right now are going to be like, maybe Barger. Barger has some raw power. He needs to work on getting on base a little more, but Barger is one of the few young guys I feel like I'm glad they hung on to, because he has, there's some lightning in that bat, right? But you're going to see players on the team, you're going to see that solution you're going to find the solution to that problem from the Vladdies of the world and probably the Kirks of the world, guys like that. And so I don't know. Was Horwitz really going to be the solution? I tend to lean no. Sterling from Berkeley and Barrie. Okay, Sterling from Berkeley and Barrie. Hope the Blue Jays will win more games than the Sacramento A's in 25 and 26. He's not a big fan of Ross Atkins, but he says, I like the trade. It does give options. Will we be better than Sacramento this year? Yeah, I mean, I think so. I do think so. That team is still going to be real bad. And also, that Luis Severino deal, I still find quite baffling. Like, now they're spending the Vegas money? Like, now is when they're going to do it, when they're going to be in Sacramento for God knows how long? I thought that was a very strange deal. No, I'm not sure the Jays, despite their record last year, are going to be in the same boat as the A's, but does that mean they're going to be higher than fourth in the American League East? I think the answer to that question, the jury's still out on the answer to that question. Keep the text coming, though. 590, 590, name and location. I see a whole bunch here that I didn't get to. After we chat with Chris Rose, I'll continue reading your text, and we'll hear a little bit from Ross Atkins. We'll hear a little bit from John Schneider as well. They spoke to Hazel May in Dallas as the winter meetings continue. But on the other side, Chris Rose from the Chris Rose Rotation Podcast. We'll get the Cleveland Guardian skinny on Andrés Giménez. We'll chat with him on the other side. You're listening to Jays Talk. Show Ali with you on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Quintana's ready. The 3-1 delivery. Swung on, hit high, deep to right center field. This ball is gone. We are tied at 3. Andrés Giménez with a towering 3-run home run to right center. And just like that, the Guardians are back to even. And Giménez continues to be as good as anybody in the game when the chips are on the table and the game is on the line. Wow!
That is the great Tom Hamilton, radio play-by-play for the Guardians. That was a call from this past year, so maybe Jays fans will get a little bit more of that at the Rogers Center in 2025 as we welcome you back to Jays Talk on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Show Ali here with you. One more segment on the program before we say goodbye. By the way, you actually heard Tom Hamilton there. We got to extend our congrats to him. It was announced today that he is this year's recipient of the Ford C. Frick Award. And for those not familiar with that award, Tom Cheek won that many years ago, but it is presented annually by the Hall of Fame to the best broadcaster in baseball. So well-deserved by Tom, who I actually met once or twice when he was here for a couple series over the years. So genuinely a nice guy and amazing at his job. So very well-deserved for the great Tom Hamilton. Someone else amazing at his job joining us right now. It's Chris Rose from NFL Network and, of course, host of the Chris Rose Rotation. Chris, how are you today?
Doing great. Yeah, I'd like to echo those sentiments. I've known Tom a long time, being a native Clevelander, and just I was so happy when I saw the announcement. You know, people have probably heard his clips. You just played a great one. He just is so enthusiastic about this sport, and really not just for the Cleveland Guardians, but when the other team does something big, he's not one of those, there's a fly ball to left, right, and the Guardians are going to be dead. Like, he is into it. He loves the passion and the drama and everything that happens with the sport. So I'm thrilled for him, and he is a great, great recipient of that honor.
I still think the down goes Anderson call from the Jose Ramirez, yeah, Tim Anderson brawl, that might be one of my favorite radio calls ever, honestly.
Yeah, it's not bad. It's not bad. He's like the two sports star. He's like the, yeah, Deion Sanders version of calling two sports in one play.
No, he is. He really is. Like, for him to come up with that off the top of his head, like, in the moment is amazing. No, well done. So well-deserved by the great Tom Hamilton. But I appreciate you taking out some time of your day to parse some thoughts on this trade with me. You know, before we discuss salaries and how it makes sense for the Guardians and Horwitz off to Pittsburgh, before we talk about all of that, all those tertiary aspects, I mean, can you sum up the kind of player Andrés Giménez is for Blue Jays fans? Because I think a lot of people remember his amazing 2022 season, all-star year, phenomenal season for him, and then probably not a lot else since then. So can you give us the skinny on what Jays fans will see?
Well, there's plenty to remember since that 2022 all-star season. It's just that 95% of it is on defense, and there's nothing wrong with that. Like, he is the best defensive second baseman in the game, and it's not close. It's going to be reminiscent of when Roberto Alomar first came up to Toronto, where he was making plays going to his left that just other guys couldn't get to, right? I mean, Robbie Alomar was originally a shortstop when he was coming up in the Padres organization. He gets traded over to Toronto, and he's one of the best second basemen we've ever seen. And that's exactly what you're getting. Now, the difference is that I think that Giménez could eventually move back to his original position of shortstop, and we can get to that in a bit. But you're getting a guy that is there every day, brings a smile. This is not going over great in Cleveland, in part because of his personality and who he is and how much fun he is to watch on defense. The problem has been that since peaking in 2022 with an OPS of right around 830, it's fallen off the table. You know, it was low 700s in 2023, and I think Cleveland probably doesn't make this move if that's where he was this past year. But he was one of the worst everyday hitters in baseball last year in terms of OPS. He was bottom five. It was 632, and it was tough. It was a tough watch. He looked lost at times. I'm obviously not around the team on a daily basis, so I don't know what sort of adjustments were or were not being made. I root for him to get back because I'm one of those guys. I just think he did a tremendous amount for this city, and the city really loved him. But if, you know, unfortunately, it looks like 2022 is the outlier instead of 2024 at this point.
It's funny, though, when I'm trying to explain that he's a good defender, sometimes it almost feels like, and don't get me wrong, like, there are questions with the bat, certainly, but it almost feels like when it comes to the glove, like I'm kind of like underselling it to a certain extent. Like, this is a guy that had, 63 ribbies and 9 home runs in 2024, and yet had a 4.0 WARs, which tells me the value added from his glove alone is so good that most of that WAR is just made up of defensive excellence, essentially.
Yeah, that's exactly the way you nailed it. And he'll be, I think, a minimum of a 4-WAR player. Now, I don't think all 4-WAR players are created the same. Sure. I just don't. Because there's plenty of power-hitting first basemen that have high OPSs that won't get anywhere near a 4-WAR because they just don't value the defense of a first baseman, basically. And that's okay. I'm not here to, you know, debate the merits of WAR and what percentage defense makes up of that criteria. But I will tell you this, that on a Cleveland team, he couldn't have survived making the type of money that he will eventually make. It would have been fine this year. He's making $10.5 million. They probably would have been stomachable in 2026 at $15.5 million. Then you have three subsequent seasons at $23.5 million. And the fear was, I think, with Cleveland, and I didn't talk to anybody in the organization, but here's just reading it and following it as closely as I do. The fear was that he would have a similar season that he had in 2024 at the plate, in which case he would have been nearly unmovable at this time next year. And here, Toronto took his whole deal. Now, they picked up a fairly serviceable reliever in Nick Sandlin as well. That's part of what Cleveland had to give up in order to rid themselves of $100 million of payroll. But that's the way it works when you are a tiny, tiny market like Cleveland.
you know, on the salary side of things, I am curious to get your take on this just in a general sense. Because like you said, you're not there all the time watching this day in and day out. But I am curious, you probably see this more than I do. Beyond these trades, when you talk about money for the Guardians, Bally Sports deal and MLB going to handle the Guardians broadcast this year, like, does that affect how much money a team like Cleveland and other teams have to work with?
Well, of course it does, right? They were used to getting, I forget if it was $55 million a year maybe from Bally's, and now they're getting, I don't know what the percentage is that Major League Baseball is giving the Guardians to recoup some of those funds, but it's not dollar for dollar, I can tell you that. I'm not here to make excuses for Paul Dolan. If you check out his net worth in terms of lining up the 30 owners and where he sits, he's usually around 5, 6, 7. Does that mean that he's liquid, that he's able to go contract for contract with the Steve Cohns of the world? No, he's not. And Cleveland, as Cleveland fans, whether we like it or not, it's something we just have to accept. I can't stand the morons that want to scream at the top of their lungs on social media, we'll just sell the team. Wait, so wait a second. You think that Paul Dolan is combing through Twitter right now and going, oh, wow, look at all these people that want me to sell the team. Maybe I should sell the team today. Like, that's not what's going to happen.
Right.
So when it's your business, you can run it any way you want. I'm not going to give up my fandom because I'm frustrated that our owner doesn't spend more money. If you want to go do that, go for it. More people make a hollow threat than actually go through with it. All those people who say, oh, I'm not going to ever support you, are the ones who will be there on opening day, and they can't wait to cheer Stephen Vogt and the rest of his players out there. Like, sorry, that's an easy thing to say on December 11th. Go ahead and prove it to me that you're not going to show up and buy the product. Because I will. I love the players. The manager's a good friend of mine. The coaching staff, I love them. Our front office of Antonetti and Chernoff are fantastic, and I'm going to support them. Now, the ownership is a totally different thing, but I don't know about you. I've never gone to a game to root for an owner.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think, to your point, I mean, we see that echoed not just in baseball, but I mean, like, Woody Johnson and Jerry Jones are not selling the teams. Like, that's not happening. That's not happening anytime soon. So I'm with you, Chris. I'm chatting with Chris Rose from the Chris Rose Rotation, of course, NFL Network broadcaster as well. I guess the Guardians drafted Travis Bazzano with the number one overall pick last year, or this past year, I guess. And I imagine he's going to play second base. I would also imagine, if not in 2025, at least for Travis, it's certainly going forward. But I imagine as well, Chris, this means the team is all in on Brian Rocchio at shortstop. Like, Jimenez was someone who could play both those positions, but now he's gone and you got to fill both those spots.
Well, yeah, Jimenez was never a shortstop with us. Very, very little. I actually, to be honest with you, although Rocchio hit exceptionally well in the playoffs and unfortunately his glove wasn't there, his glove was really good during the regular season and he couldn't hit, so he kind of flip-flopped that come October. I personally think both those middle infield positions are open.
Okay.
I do think that Rocchio has the edge there. Gabriel Arias, who was part of the Clevinger trade and has been up with the team for quite a bit over the last few years, although he got sent down midseason and then we really didn't see him again. He's got the strongest arm on the team, and you look at him and he looks like a 20-homer guy, but just hasn't been able to put it together. The guy who I think has got the inside track on second base is a guy named Juan Brito. He came over from Colorado in the Nolan Jones deal a couple years ago and had a very successful AAA season. He's about to be 23, so I think he gets a shot at second base. And then Bazzano is a guy who I think will spend most, if not the entire season, in the minor leagues. You have to remember he only played about a quarter of a season as a minor leaguer last year. It's not fair to ask a guy just because he's the number one overall pick to be ready to go less than a year after being drafted. I don't see that happening.
Yeah, you're probably right. Like, I think if he were to, and it's a big if, but if he were to make his debut next year, it probably would be much later in the year and probably for a cup of coffee, right? Like, you're right.
Yeah, I think it depends. You know, his makeup is great. They love the way that he attacks the baseball, but he needs time. I imagine he starts at Double A in Akron and we'll go from there. Now, before we run out of time, I definitely want to hit on the whole Bo Bichette side of this.
Sure.
To me, that's the most fascinating part of this, because I don't think Jimenez is the perfect fit for Toronto. I could have seen him going somewhere else on a team where the offense is top-notch. Now, Toronto shocked the hell out of me last year. As you probably know, I picked them to make the World Series against the Atlanta Braves. Well, that didn't work out great for me, and it worked out worse for you guys. But if they decide to move on from Bichette, you know, does Jimenez move back to his natural position as shortstop? Now, all of a sudden, things get interesting. Don't you think?
Yeah, no, I do think that knowing that after 2025, both Vladdy and Bo are, at least the way things stand right now, could not be Blue Jays. Knowing that, and knowing that after 2026, even more guys come off the roster, like a Kevin Gausman, his contract will be up, and there's an opt-out for Jose Berríos in there. Like the point, and I know those are pitchers, but the point being that there's a lot of salary coming off the Blue Jays book. So I do wonder if they made this move, knowing that A, Jimenez could be a shortstop in the not-too-distant future, maybe even this year if they feel Bo is someone who could be traded before the deadline. I doubt that, but I can see that happening. But also, just in a general sense, Chris, I mean, they're not going to have a lot of players under contract, period, after 2026. Right. So if that's the case, they need someone like Jimenez.
They do. I feel a little bit for Jays fans because I just feel like the organization is a little bit sputtering its wheels. Like, I don't know which direction they're going. Like, I think their starting rotation is decent, but then I look at the Yankees and I look at what Boston just did in picking up Garrett Crochet, and all of a sudden I'm like, that rotation is kind of interesting. And you have to imagine that Baltimore is going to get in on, if not Corbin Burns, they have to do something, or they, in my opinion, they're wasting some young people's years. And then Toronto, you know, Vlad is, he'd be silly to sign an extension right now. Unless it was $400 million, he'd be silly to sign an extension, I think, right now. With his age and with what just transpired with Juan Soto and could transpire with some other guys soon, I think he just waits to see what free agency brings him. And Bo Bichette has to he has to have a bounce back year. I mean, he hasn't been Bo Bichette since July of 23.
Yeah. No, it's true. I think when it comes to the continual arms race, not just in the American League, but in the American League East in particular, I think a lot of Blue Jays fans are a little concerned. The way I look at the Jimenez trade, to let you go, Chris, here on this one, the way I look at it is simple. It's just, if this is the biggest move of the offseason for the Jays, it's done. Like, I think a lot of fans are going to have a lot of vitriol towards the front office. If this is like the third or fourth biggest move of the offseason, it's a little more palatable. Not because Jimenez is a bad player by any means. He's very good. It's just, you know, it's more of the same in the sense of a lot of really good middle infielders who are defensively sound and can't hit very well. So I do think that while good in a vacuum, it will be something that will be judged maybe more completely once other moves are made, not just for the Jays, but within the division.
Yeah, I agree with that. Now, you dealt from a position of strength, right? Spencer Horwitz didn't have a position per se. I'm curious to see how he turns out because I actually was excited when he came on and had his 90-minute tenure in Cleveland.
Right.
And it was, you know, it was one to remember. Thank God they allowed me to return the Horwitz jersey online. You know, but yeah, I think they're at a crossroads. They are, to me, they're like one of the top three most confusing teams in baseball. And so if you're a fan right now of the Toronto Blue Jays, I totally understand what is happening, or I guess what isn't happening with them to some degree.
Chris, appreciate you doing this for me, man. Really good of you to take some time out of what is, I know, a busy schedule. Thank you so much. Have a great call and calls for the NFL Network this coming weekend. I always see you. Actually, it's funny, in the studio, they were playing NFL Network on the TV, and I saw you pop up on here. So it's kind of bizarre to talk to you on the phone and also have you on the TV on the replay here. But I do appreciate you taking some time for me. Thank you so much, and hopefully we can do this again soon.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
There he goes, Chris Rose from the Chris Rose Rotation and, of course, NFL Network broadcaster. This is the part of the show where if you are listening via podcast, and if you're listening right now, you are listening via podcast, I wanted to do something a little different because if I'm being completely honest, when I did the show on the radio just about 15, 20 minutes ago at the time of me recording this, I ran out of time. Okay, if I'm being completely honest, went a little long with Nick, went a little longer with Chris than I intended. And I didn't want to leave this episode, because we do so few of these off-season editions of the show. I didn't want to leave without giving you guys some of the pieces of audio all in one convenient place about this Jimenez trade. And also, like I mentioned to Nick, we live in this post Juan Soto world. So before we get to the texts, and I do want to read as many of the texts as people sent in, because people feel all kinds of way about the trade. But I think more than that, as you'll hear, the texts, I think, like they kind of belie, it's not really about Andres Jimenez. You know what I mean? It's more about how people feel about the way Ross Atkins and Mark Shapiro do business. So there's a lot of text here. I want to get to as many of them as possible. But before we do that, I wanted to play some audio for you guys. So first up is Ross Atkins. Now, Ross Atkins spoke to Hazel May, Sportsnet's own Hazel May, who's down in Dallas for the winter meetings. We're going to hear from Atkins with Hazel. We're going to hear from John Schneider, also with Hazel. Atkins spoke to Hazel immediately after the trade on the 10th. The Hazel conversation is from the 11th. This is the guys talking about a variety of things, but it's mostly them talking about the post-Juan Soto world we live in, Vladimir Guerrero Jr., certainly the Jimenez trade as well. And then I actually wanted to play a clip from Scott Boras. Scott Boras sat down with Hazel May and Shai Davidi, and you'll hear Hazel's question to Scott, but I thought it was an interesting look into the pitch for Soto from the Blue Jays. So we'll get to all of those in a sec, but I wanted to start with the GM. I know he's everyone's favorite GM in the city. He's everyone's favorite Toronto personality, but you know what? I did think it was important we hear from him. So here's Ross Atkins in the hour following the Andres Jimenez trade with Sportsnet's own Hazel May.
Ross, what can you tell us about Andres Jimenez?
Really exciting player that's going to be a big impact for us. Excited about both sides of the ball for him. He is someone that we know can hit, and if he can get into more of the, you know, driving the ball, there's upside there. The defense and base running are elite. That is absolutely proven. Excited about just that athleticism coming onto our field. And everything we know about the person and teammates been exceptional.
What can you tell us about the person? What have you heard about the person?
Yeah, just a really passionate baseball player, incredible teammate that is beloved by the group there. It was difficult for them to part ways. We know some of their players very well. I know some of their players very well that have always talked very highly of them.
A lot of Blue Jays fans probably don't know too much about Nick Sandlin. What can you tell us about him?
It's a unique look for us that has some swing and miss that comes into our pen. He flew to the major leagues out of the draft and has been successful the entire time he's been there. So it's a reliever that comes into the fold that will get right-handed hitters out for sure. He's not going to back down from either side of the plate. You know, has been a warrior for that team, so it's a nice addition.
You get two good players. You have to give up some good players. Spencer has, you know, really been a fan favorite when he showed up at the big league level. What have you lost in giving away Spencer?
Yeah, you know, great story. Spence's has been an incredible story for our scouting department, for our the player development group, the performance group, obviously for the major league staff. You know, really established himself as someone that could hit right-handed pitching with anyone, and similar, not you know, held his own against left-handed pitching. Had some huge at-bats for us last year, and was a big part of our late season success. So great person, great human. We will miss him. I'll be pulling for him, and some of the tough aspects of the job.
Can you quickly tell us about his reaction when you made contact with him?
Yeah, very, very poised. He's a professional. I think really someone who he's just locked in on baseball, answered the phone on the first ring, and was very calm and respectful and professional. We're still communicating with him, and we'll, you know, have continued dialogue and remain fans of us.
So there you go. That's Ross Atkins chatting with Sportsnet's Hazel May. It's nice to get some actual Blue Jays content. Let me just say, having said that, I'm not sure anyone expected to hear anything differently from Ross Atkins. I will say, I think it's interesting that when you heard him talk about Jimenez, Ross Atkins said a lot of things. Everything about him was attractive. The offensive impact that can be there. We heard a lot about the person, incredible things about the person, the base runner. So he emphasized a lot of the things we as fans want to hear about, and certainly in the media want to hear about Jimenez. But I thought it was interesting that he emphasized potential in the bat and the speed, and not really talk about his defense, which is because if much like we just had these conversations with Nick and Chris, the first thing you know about Andrés Jimenez is that he is an elite defender. That is the first thing you know. So it's kind of funny. The reason I bring that up is because I wonder if Ross Atkins is not just aware of how fans feel about their defense first run prevention philosophy, right? I mentioned before earlier in the show about what Blair said to me, right? That's just the case. Everyone and their mother knows what their plan is. So I found that really interesting, but I did want to get that out there because, you want to hear from the GM when they make a big trade like they did last night. Okay, let's hear a little bit from John Schneider. This is a conversation with Hazel from the 11th, from today, as the day I'm recording this. And ultimately, it starts with the Juan Soto pursuit, talks a little bit about Vladimir Guerrero Jr. in the aftermath of the Juan Soto pursuit, but it largely deals with Andrés Jimenez. So let's hear it. Here is the skipper, John Schneider, chatting with Sportsnet's Hazel May.
You've got a pretty great player in Vladimir Guerrero Jr., and I center him out because there's been a lot of focus now away from Juan to Vladdy and an extension and, what his future is like. As his manager, as you go into 2025, how do you keep all this white noise from being a distraction to what he and you and your players want to do in 2025?
Yeah, it's not that hard with a guy like Vlad. He's getting ready for the season as he does every year, and he's doing everything he needs to do to have another monster year. I think when everyone understands the business part of the game and where he is with his contract, and it can get a little bit sticky at times, but our view with Vlad has never changed. We want him to be here for as long as he can, and we know that Vladdy loves it here. So when you're dealing with that off the field, that's Vlad. I think our job is to make sure he's comfortable and that he's performing well. Mm. And we're lucky enough that he's that type of person where it shouldn't really, bleed into his day-to-day.
Do you think the personal relationship you have with Vladdy, knowing him for a long time, can that be an advantage for you?
I'd like to think so. Yeah. I've known him since he's a teenager and watched him turn into this, superstar, and we're very comfortable with one another. We've been through good times and bad times, and someone that I'm very comfortable with, and I think that he's very comfortable with me. So Vladdy likes that. He likes kind of, continuity and routines, and likes to be, comfortable with what he's doing. So I hope it does. We've had great conversations, throughout last season, off season. I love what he's doing right now. So yeah. I hope that does play a little bit of a factor.
You guys pulled off a big trade in acquiring Andrés Jimenez. Tell me what you know of him from all your vetting and all the scouting you've come.
Thrilled to have him. I mean, I think probably the best defender in baseball in the infield position. Seeing him in Cleveland, you just didn't want a ball hit to him. Mm-hmm. So glad to have him on our side. I think there's a ton of upside with his bat. We've already been talking with David Popkins and how to unlock some of the power that he has shown at the big league level already. And I think there's a lot of upside in the bat. But just, talked to Andrés last night. He's excited, thrilled to kind of be part of this. He's an easygoing guy. And he posts every day. He's a really, really dynamic player. I love that he's left-handed. I love that he can run. I love the way he's going to play defense. And if we can get a little more offense out of him, you're talking about a really impact player.
You're going to have Blue Jays fans. And I think a lot of people in the industry, they think Andrés Jimenez is a terrific player, a little bit surprised that you guys went for a little bit more defensive-skewed player and another middle infielder. So why him and not a starting pitcher right now, a top reliever, and maybe a big thumper, as people are saying?
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to put, words in Ross's mouth or anything, but I think, this is a part of what we wanted to do, not the whole thing, obviously. And looking back at last year, there's other areas that we need to address. Pitching, for sure, both starting and in the bullpen. And, hopefully we can still add, some power to the middle of our lineup and slide someone in, in front of or behind Vlad and Bo. So by no means is our work done. So I think just, being able to acquire that kind of player was really attracting. And hopefully we can kind of continue to build around that.
That's very good news for a lot of Blue Jays fans who thought maybe you guys would be leaving here and you were just kind of done for the day. But
right.
You still have a few months to go before.
Yeah, I think everyone talks about the winter meetings. You know, the off season's still going. You know, when everyone leaves here today, so it's nice to kind of get a groundwork, if you will, of what you want to do with teams that are here. But I think by no means are we done trying to make our team better.
All right, last two for me. One, I'm curious about the message for you to Blue Jays fans who are, and you've said it, you guys were pretty disappointed about last season as well. They're disappointed. They're frustrated. Maybe borderline. Like, why aren't you guys doing something? As you go to 2025, what would you like to tell Blue Jays fans and what they should expect from this ball club moving forward?
For one, hopefully more wins, right? That's what it comes down to. The fact that, you know, it's not, we're not rebuilding, you know, we're not resetting, we're trying to win the division, you know, and it's a tough draw in this division, but we understand that we fell well short of expectations, you know, from the team that we put together at this time last year. And, you know, the one good thing about, you know, not being in playoff contention was we kind of got a head start on what we wanted to do for 2025. So those conversations have been happening for about 3 months now, and our focus, our goal is to understand where we failed last year, address it accordingly, and put another playoff caliber team on the field. It is, you know, when you look at the last 4 or 5 years where we are really competitive, last year was definitely not what we expected. We've made some changes to, you know, staff. We've made some personnel changes to address that. And you learn from the things you didn't do well at last year. And it's been a time to reflect for sure. And I think we've all done that. We're going to continue to do it. But when you have the help with ownership, they're going to go out and they're going to help us in that regard. That's all you can really ask for. So, again, to the fans, 2024 is not what we expect. It's not what we plan for. It's not what our fans deserve. So hopefully 2025 kicks off in a better way.
It will be interesting to see what the impact of the new hitting coach will be in this new, I don't want to call it a new era, because it's not really. As long as Mark Shapiro and Ross Atkins are at the top of this team, ultimately we're still in the same era. They're kind of just changing some window dressing. But I mean, like, the hitting coach is important. How much did we talk about the hitting coach this past season? Spoiler, a lot. Whether it was me doing it or Blair and Barker doing it, like, we were talking about that issue, or Blake doing it. We're talking about it a lot, right? So the point is, while I'm not sure it will have a massive difference, the new hitting coach, I am curious to see if a new hitting coach can help Andrés Giménez, because he's new to the organization. Popkins is new to the organization. By the way, I can never unhear that whole David S. Pumpkins thing whenever I hear his name. I'm certain we will make jokes about that in the new year. But either way, the idea is mostly that can Giménez benefit from a new coach now that he's leaving an organization entirely, coming into a new organization with a new philosophy on things? And say what you want about the difference between the Guardians organization and the Blue Jays organization. The Guardians are a team that just won their division. Blue Jays finished dead last in theirs. So here we are. I do think it probably is a boon for Giménez. Having said that, I'm not sure I personally am going to be banking on some kind of massive turnaround for the newest member of the Toronto Blue Jays. But either way, it was interesting to hear what John Schneider had to say. Again, like, will this move the needle ultimately? I think only if other moves are made to supplement it, right? That is generally how I view this, because, you know, are we really going to be banking again on a bounce back from another player? How many times have we collectively, fans in the media, done that in the last year, 2 years even? Too much is the answer to that question, right? Like, you can't be saying, oh, okay, well, we're going to get a bounce back from Springer this year. We're going to get a bounce back offensively from Alejandro Kirk this year. And hey, maybe there's some potential in the bats of Will Wagner and Joey Loperfido and all these other guys. Maybe there is. I'm not saying there isn't. It's just, can you count on that to be the reason why you think this team will climb out of the basement of the American League East? Generally, I say no to that, right? So I like the move, again, in a vacuum, as I've said many times in this episode, but yeah, it cannot be the only move. Before we get to your texts, let's get to Hazel May one more time. Always fun hearing from Hazel, by the way. I love that they got her real busy down in Dallas. So I'm sure she's looking forward to a bit of a break once the winter meetings are over. But this is actually the last thing I wanted to get to before we get to your texts. It's Hazel talking to Scott Boras. And Scott Boras is a larger-than-life character. This is actually an interview that will be on Sportsnet.ca if you want to watch the whole thing. This is just a clip from the interview. It's not the whole interview. The Schneider interview was also not the whole thing. I kind of cut it down just so we heard the more relevant parts. But the Scott Boras thing, it was a wide-ranging conversation, and it also involved Shai Davidi. This is a smaller clip, so you'll only hear Hazel and then Boras. But this was actually a clip about the Blue Jays' pursuit of Juan Soto. And I thought this was fascinating because you don't hear, in my opinion, agents talk about the involvement of team ownership so specifically as you do here. And he actually name drops Edward Rogers. So let's hear what Scott Boras, super agent, signing that 15-year, $765 million deal for Juan Soto. Let's hear what Scott Boras had to say. Here he is with Hazel May.
Generational players like Juan Soto, we understand the Blue Jays were in pursuit of Mr. Soto. I'd like to know, on a team where you've got expiring contracts from superstars, how did they pitch the Blue Jays?
Well, I'm not going to talk specifically, but I'll tell you how I look at it and what advice we give players. And that is, when ownership gets directly involved, they show that it's something that's personal to them. You have an indication that there is want, flexibility, desire to win that is consistent with what the executives of the team want and what they want for their country and their community. When you know that and you have that backdrop, and I thought that Edward did a great job. He came and sat down with us, took the time, spoke directly to us all about his philosophy, his feelings, his commitment to the Canadian country, Toronto, the city, and really what it meant to his family. That allows me to tell that to players, allows him to communicate it, and I think it really humanizes the Blue Jay franchise.
I do think the most interesting aspect of that is simply that, like I said, Scott Boras name dropped Ed Rogers. And the short read on this is simply that Ed Rogers personally understands the importance of making sure his fancy, shiny new ballpark actually has fans in it, right? Because let's be honest, if Vladdy and Bo leave, what does this team have? Nothing, I would say, right? Or maybe nothing is a strong word, but no bankable, marketable stars that the fan base immediately knows and loves. And maybe they do get to know some of these new guys, some of the younger guys coming up. Maybe a Namala ends up being that. Maybe a Jimenez ends up being that. Who knows? I have no idea. But my point more than anything else is that they have those guys already, and they could have gotten another one in Juan Soto. So it tells me he's taking it seriously. It also tells me he is very aware that he just spent $400 million in the ballpark renovations of his own money. And if he puts out a non-competitive franchise onto that field day in and day out, fans won't go. And I won't blame them. And I don't think he's going to blame them either. So I think that Ed Rogers was so involved with this says good things about, I think, his intent to have the Blue Jays be serious competitors. Having said that, that only goes so far if you swing and miss on Ohtani and you swing and miss on Soto, and then you don't sign any of the free agents with the money that remains, right? So you can't let anyone off the hook completely. But for me, at least, that says he is willing to assess all aspects of the situation. And if things go awry again, I've said before that billion-dollar franchises typically don't fire front office executives mid-season. If things go awry again, I would be shocked if he didn't. You know what I mean? I'd be shocked if he lets this get too far out of hand, because again, he knows that the best way to make money, essentially, because that's what he wants. He wants to make money. These billionaires all want to make money. The best way to do that is by having a good baseball team. And to do that, you have to spend money, right? Isn't that the saying? To make money, you got to spend money. So anyways, I thought that was really interesting from Scott Boras, who we don't hear mention owners directly, other than Steve Cohen, I guess, that all that often. Let's take your text, okay? Let's do it. 590-590, name and location. That is, as always, the People's Text Line. If you're listening to this via podcast, you know, you can't really text us live, but there were a lot of texts on the text line when we did this, so let's hear it, and we'll start with Ian and Barry. Let's see. If he turns his bat around, could give off Simeon light vibes. I see one here. This one is from, actually, there's no name on this text. Sometimes I can see the names if I scroll back far enough, but there's no name on any of these texts. So if you have a name, if you have a name, I'm sure this person has a name. If you'd like to share your name, you can text me 590-590. This one, I think, echoes what Chris was saying. Management team has no direction or plan. They just run from player to player with no real plan. Here's the thing. I do think they do have a plan. I'm just not sure we like that plan, but I do think they do actually have a plan in the sense that they like to go after the cost-controllable players. You know, what was the joke about years of control? And they don't like, you know, low-hanging fruit was something we made fun of. I think rightly so when Ross Atkin said that at the season-ending press conference. And, like, that's the plan. The plan is run prevention. Do we like that plan? No. I personally do not. I think that is echoed by many of you guys. But I'm also willing to say that it's not that they don't have a plan. It's just maybe we want to see a change in the plan. Lou from Toronto says, this is just a general one. I always regret the fact that the Blue Jays traded a variety of guys. Marcus Semien, one of them, certainly. Fernandez, another. You know what? Semien was never the guy I felt... Like, he was never the guy, like, I thought got away, if only because when he's... And I know it worked out for him, and it's like hindsight is what it is, because he's a very good player, obviously. But I just remember the reaction when Marcus Semien signed with the Texas Rangers, and he got, like, an absolute bag. And I remember everyone and their mother was saying, this is going to age incredibly poorly. And then right away, it almost felt like we were all proven right, right? Because he did not have a very good year with the Rangers right away. And then the next year, they won the World Series. So it's like, okay, like, I don't think they really care about the money because they won their first ever World Series ever. I'm not sure that is why it hinges for me on, like, letting guys go. I think maybe, like, Teoscar Hernandez is maybe the more, at least for me, the more apt one. But I was pretty happy for old Marcus getting the kind of money he did. Tyler from Welland has an idea. What about moving Bo to second and Jimenez to short, Vlad at third, sign Santander for first? I'm not sure I'd put Santander at first. Like, if you're signing Anthony Santander, I think one of the values you get from him, even though he didn't play a lot of different outfield positions last year specifically, I think one of the boons you're getting from him is that he can play in the outfield and play pretty well. So if you're signing Santander, Tyler, for me, you're signing him to play out there, not at first base. But I mean, again, you can move Vladdy to third base, but it has to be for the right player. Like, I'm not sure Santander is the guy at first base I'd move Vladdy for. I'd still sign him, but I'm thinking it's probably more an Alonso or Christian Walker. Like, those are the two names I got to think you'd be looking at the most when it comes to who do we feel the most comfortable about moving Vladdy off of his best position, the position he likes and feels comfortable at, for, right? Those are probably the only two names, probably. The other part of it, though, like, if you were to move Bo to second and Jimenez to short, like, I have no issue with that. The real question is, would Bo have an issue with that? Because I think, if you were moving Bo off of short for, like, Francisco Lindor, remember when that was reported, when we thought Lindor was going to be a Blue Jay prior to his trade to the Mets? Yeah, sure. Do it. You know, I'm not sure anyone's complaining, even Bo, if you're moving him to short for someone like Lindor, but that's not what's happening here, right? I'm not sure Jimenez is the guy you move Bo off. But if Bo was not on the team going forward, then I could see that at least being the short-term solution. Is that a long-term solution for the Blue Jays? I don't know. I don't think so. I would be surprised. I see a text here from Blair Noshua. Oh, Blair just says bats is what this team needs. Bregman and Santander. I will be the first to say I'm not sold on Alex Bregman. I mean, both these guys are on the wrong side of 30, but as am I suppose, as of many are us in life. But Bregman specifically, I mean, both those guys kind of scare me, but if I had to pick between those two, Blair, I think I'm picking Santander, because Bregman, as talented as he is, the injury stuff, I mean, he has some elbow issues this past season. It kind of puts me off to a certain extent. And knowing the kind of money he wants, I can't help but think he might just end up going back to Houston. And that might be the best place for him. There's one from Nick in Collingwood. Jimenez had 30 stolen bags last year. We haven't had a burner on the base paths since 2013, Rajai Davis. Maybe Jays add more speed to complement speedster Kirk. That's pretty funny. It's not often you see Kirk going first to third, much less taking off early from bases. But I know what you mean, Nick. It is true. I mean, when was the last time the Blue Jays had... I'm trying to think as I'm talking here. When was the last time they really had someone who caused some chaos on the base paths? Like, I guess Whit Merrifield kind of sort of did that, but he was not exactly a burner, I would say.
He was more of the kind of guy who, you know, would make the pitcher think twice on the base paths, like kind of like put some little of that fear of God in the back of the pitcher's mind, knowing that Merrifield was out there. But you're right. Like when we're talking about actual speed, not a lot of guys, I think, fit the bill in the last couple of years. So I like this. I see actually a text that came in while I was reading that said Ben Revere. It's true. I mean, Ben Revere is one of those guys, but the point I think more than anything is just that there have not been many of these guys, period, in the last couple of years. So I do like it. Brian in Toronto, Show didn't like moving Horwitz, though he did have no role here. Jimenez does give you offense as far as some power, great speed as far as stealing bases, could improve with a slightly higher OBP. He has elite speed. He could bat 1-2 with Springer, Varsho on the bottom of the lineup, 8-9. Jays could have elite speed. Jays also get a good pen arm, brought back one earlier in the day in Garcia. A good day for the organization. It's true. I actually had forgotten about Jimmy Garcia coming back, and Nick did mention this earlier, and I didn't get a chance to get into it with him. But honestly, Jimmy Garcia, again, the health will end up being the issue with Jimmy because obviously he got injured when he was a Blue Jay like last season, like this past season. And then when he got traded, got injured more or less right away. And I think he ended the season on the injured list. So if that's the case, he's got to be healthy. But I mean, the way the bullpen is presently constructed, it's a good point by Brian. If Jimmy is healthy, I mean, that's your closer. No, I mean, it's kind of tough, I will say, also to see Jordan Romano off to Philly because, you know, I think in his introductory press conference with the Phillies, he said he was a little surprised to get non-tendered. I do wonder about that. I mean, maybe he is just saying it to like pacify fans to a certain extent, because I can't imagine he was that surprised. I mean, he was injured and is a little bit older and is making a lot of money. Like typically any reliever in that situation typically gets non-tendered. Like, I don't know how often it is that those same guys in the same situations then get re-signed, but ultimately I found that I don't want to say baffling, but just like kind of an unfortunate ending to Romano's tenure as a Blue Jay. Having said that, I'm actually quite happy for him that he's going to be a Philly, because that's a great play. If he's healthy, that is a great place to rehabilitate some value. But on Jimmy Garcia with no Romano in the picture, that could be your closer. Like that, he pitched well enough to be your closer when he was a Blue Jay last year, which is kind of where you got a bunch of his value from anyway. So now that Jimmy's back in the organization, yeah, kind of with you, Brian. Let's see and look at some other texts here. Barry, listening online from Maui. Wow. Barry then has the emoji with the sunglasses. So well done, Barry. Hope you're having a good time in Maui. Good trade for an established player, but just a start. But what are they doing with Bassett? Is he confirmed to return? At least, unless things have changed while I've been recording this, he is confirmed to return, but that doesn't necessarily mean he is guaranteed to be a Blue Jay after this season, right? Or let me rephrase, because his contract ends. It doesn't guarantee that he's going to be a Blue Jay by the end of the season, right? Because if you think about it like that, I mean, he is making a lot of money. He's a little bit older. Having said that, he's pretty durable and reliable. So there might be, if things go south for the Blue Jays, then he might be pretty attractive to the right people. At least right now, Barry, he is confirmed to return. He will be a part of the rotation next year. Derek and Barry says Schneider, Martinez, Loperfido, Clement, Wagner, Barger. They're all the same person. They can't have more than three of them on the opening day roster and be taken seriously. They've had 7 years to plan for this. Where was the foresight? I think it's a valid criticism, Derek. Honestly, I really do. And I think the truth is, now that Horwitz is gone, they almost have to make some moves. I kind of hope... I said this when I saw the Jimenez trade yesterday, but Martinez and Wagner are the ones I really hope they hold on to, just because I want to see what is there from them. I don't think I have seen enough from either of them personally to say, yeah, I'm comfortable with them going. I think what Barger is as a player. And I'm pretty confident I know what Ernie Clement and David Schneider are as players. And I'm not saying I would ship them out, but if they get you good relief help, I think I would probably do that. Now, of course, it hinges on them actually signing someone, but this whole conversation hinges on them actually signing someone of consequence to bat third in the order or fourth in the order or whatever it is, corner outfielder, DH, probably both, frankly, if we're being honest. I tend to agree with Derek that you can't have a bunch of these guys in the opening day roster batting anywhere from 1-9 and feel good about it. So I am with you on that. There's no name on this one. This is a long text. I'm only going to read a piece of it. But
Awful take on this trade show. Never heard of Jimenez. Never saw him on one offensive highlight last year. We have 4 second basemen already. The reason everyone is upset is Horwitz could hit, and Jays fans saw that. Please find me someone who thinks the Jays are in a position to trade away offense. If the Bisons are the solution like they were last year, God help us all. Stop sounding like an Atkins defender. Management has done an awful job and should be fired. Overpaying a defensive specialist will get you nothing but last place, which is where the 2025 Jays will reside and end up next season. Dang. As Blair says, I'll mark you down as undecided. Look, it's not my fault you've never heard of Andrés Jiménez. The man was an all-star like 2 years ago. Now, again, you can't be banking on only that. As Chris says, is that the outlier versus all the other years of his career? Maybe. That's definitely true. But I'm not sure I agree that the reason everyone upset is Horwitz could hit and Jays fans saw that. Could Horwitz hit? Like, maybe the better question is, could Horwitz hit for power? I'm not sure. I think the answer to that question is yes. I don't think he was not a banger, and the Blue Jays need bangers. As Barker likes to say, you heard Hazel say it. She probably borrowed the term from Kevin. They need thumpers. And Horwitz is not a thumper. He has a good batting average and he gets on base. But the Blue Jays, just as Derek said, the Blue Jays have like a million of those guys. So was Horwitz is a bit of a surplus. He wasn't going to play at first base knowing that Vladdy's here for at least one more year. And I think we saw that the second base experiment for Horwitz was over even before this, right? So I don't know if I agree with that. And I don't know. I'm defending myself a little bit here, but I don't think I'm an Atkins defender. It's just this, the reality of the situation is he is in charge right now. And if things, again, as we just talked about, if things go south, his ass is getting fired because it has to, right? Like it would be the, what do we always talk about? What's the definition of insanity? Doing the same thing over and over and over again and expecting a different result. Yeah, we will be engaging in insanity if again it goes wrong and again they don't make a change. And we're again sitting here in December of 2025 and talking about this exact thing. Yeah, then yeah, I'd be an Atkins defender. But no, I've said all along and there needs to be a change. But I'm not sure that Jays really, quote unquote, traded away offense by dealing away Horwitz. I would have felt that way if they were trading away like Aurelvis Martinez or like Arjun Namala or someone like that. But I'm not sure I'm on board with that for Horwitz. Having said that, I wish the guy the best as well. I mean, he's going to get a lot of chance to prove me wrong at the very least in Pittsburgh. And he's going to get to hit for Matt Haig, who is his new hitting coach. And new coach is same as the old coach, right? So I hope he proves me wrong. I would be more than happy to be proved wrong. A couple more ones we'll get to before we go. I won't judge the Jimenez trade until after the offseason, but there still has to be at least 2 big moves offensively and a few pitching acquisitions as well. I'd call up the Rockies and try to make a blockbuster, including Bo to Colorado and McMahon to Toronto with others, sign a big bat outfielder as well, and have a lineup that looks like this. Kirk as catcher, Vladdy at first, Wagner, Schneider at second, Jimenez at short, McMahon at third, Varsho, Springer, and then a big bat addition in the outfield. Look, would I hate it if Ryan McMahon was on this team? No. But I will say, I remember when we had these conversations about like these fantasy trades, which I honestly love. You guys know that. These conversations about the fantasy trades earlier in the offseason and earlier in the season prior to even the trade deadline. And I remember the report came out from, I think it was Passan, but might have been some other insiders, that essentially said that the Rockies organization has no desire to trade McMahon. And if that is the case, then I don't think you're going to be able to get him out of there, because in addition to just generally, unfortunately, being kind of a poorly run organization, I think there's not a lot of like, and you probably make this criticism of the Blue Jays as well, for being completely honest, but there's not a lot of like ability to parse out exactly what it is they're doing. But it certainly seems like they want to keep McMahon. But I mean, look, if there was an opportunity for you to go get McMahon from the Rockies, you take it. You do that, and I think you run away with it, considering he's under contract for quite some time. But I love McMahon. I don't see that happening. I love this suggestion, though. You guys know I love the fake trades. Let's see. Jimmy in Hinton, Alberta. Always like hearing from Jimmy. I really think a Teo reunion would be very healing to this fan base and this front office, because you could use a win in public relations department. It's something the Jays need very badly. It would also make yesterday's trade less of a lateral move, as you would have added power to hit cleanup, added defense to middle infield, and also added to the bullpen. It would also make all moves very well-rounded so far. Yeah, I'm with you, man. If Teo ends up being, instead of Santander, if you're getting like Teoscar Hernandez and Taylor Ward, honestly, you're probably all right. You know, there were some rumors that the Blue Jays are also tied to Gleyber Torres. Maybe that would be less of a case now that they have Jimenez. But yeah, I mean, If it's, I mean, I'm kind of, I don't mind Gleyber Torres, but he's pretty low on the list of guys I would like to see the Blue Jays go and get. But if you're getting Santander and Hernandez or Ward and Hernandez, I think I'm okay with that personally, because that's a, there's some power there. Like, I know Ward is not as sexy of a name as Santander because Santander had a career year. But if you look at the numbers from last season, outside of the home runs, Taylor Ward had a pretty good season. 25 home runs, 75 RBI, 144 hits, a 246 batting average in 2024 for the Angels. So, I don't know, like, I'd take me a Taylor Ward if there was some business to be done there. I mean, it's a it would be a trade. It wouldn't be a signing. So if they can make another trade in that sense, I think it would make a lot of sense. But I'm with you, Jimmy. I appreciate all the texts, though. 590, 590, name and location is how you can text us. I think we will be doing these a little bit more frequently throughout the off season because, you know, ultimately, want to keep you guys abreast of everything going on with the Toronto Blue Jays. But if it does happen in the next, like, 7 days, it's December 11th again as I record this. If it does happen going forward, then what's going to happen is ultimately it'll be Kevin Barker, it'll be Jeff Blair, and it'll probably be Blake Murphy doing the versions of Jays Talk in the offseason, because I'm off to Vegas. I will be in Las Vegas and the Grand Canyon for a couple of days. So I'll be back next Thursday. So hopefully we have some trades or more signings to discuss. But I always appreciate hearing from you guys. You can always tweet at me or X at me, I guess. You can shoot me a message on social media at SNS Ali. I'll try to reply to any DMs. I do appreciate it. If you could like, favorite, share, and subscribe to this podcast, it does help us a lot. You know what's funny? I haven't said this in a while, but Barker actually does read the podcast reviews. He doesn't have social media. He has Instagram, but he doesn't have Twitter. So he doesn't see any tweets and so on, but he does not have a Blue Sky account. Do not think Barker is going to be signing up for a Blue Sky account. I did. I don't know. How useful is Blue Sky? I tend to think not very useful, but here we are. You got to be engaged in all the various forms of social media. Either way, Kevin Barker, he reads the podcast reviews. So if you leave him a kind one, if not for me, I guarantee you Bark will appreciate it. I always appreciate being with you guys. For Derek Brandeo, I'm Sho Ali. Thanks again for listening to Jays Talk on the Sportsnet Radio Network.